All right. Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson back on the air again for this edition of My Car Guru. And I want to thank the folks yesterday who sent me messages. You know, as far as the show yesterday and how, you know, I was doing everything I could to hold it together for Tim and, you know, what he meant to me and to the radio station, to listening audience and to people all over this area, you know, who've watched him and stuff. You know, every life matters and is important. And, you know, when you lose somebody like that, it has a big impact. But, you know, what do you do? I mean, we just have to find a way to keep doing what we do. And I'm sure that's what Tim would want us to do, and that's what I'm going to do. You know, this show has served a lot of people for almost a quarter of a century. That's hard to say. 25 years that I've been doing this radio show. And you think I'd run out of things to talk about. Of course, some people say, well, yeah, you ran out of things to talk about a long time ago. You just keep repeating yourself, which may be true. But, you know, a lot of people forget, right? Our memories are not perfect. And, you know, sometimes we lose sight of the things that we're supposed to do when we have so much other clutter in our lives. You know, I was looking at an engine the other day for a 1965-66 Mustang convertible. Had a 289 V8 in it, and I got some bad news. It is a restoration project, so, you know, you'd expect to see some bad things. But I thought the engine was good. Actually bought it, drove it, evaluated the way I normally would. You know, put my foot on the gas and put it on there harder and see if any smoke comes out the tailpipe and listen for noises. And there weren't any. No smoke, no noises. Pull the valve cover off, and you should have seen it. It looked like a sludge fest, like all the different pieces of sludge said, let's climb up into these rocker arms and valves and make it look horrible. And that's what it did. So this whole engine has to be rebuilt now. So we're stripping it down and getting ready to send it to an engine shop for all of the machining that has to be done. But, you know, when you're restoring cars, like I say, you're going to run into stuff that you don't like. We've already rebuilt the transmission on this. I'm selling this to a friend of mine and his wife, who is also a friend. Known them both for many years, and I want it to be right. Of course, if I was selling it to you, I'd want it to be right. I don't have to know you for, you know, because I just really don't like people to be negatively surprised by anything that I sell them. I've sold over $1 million worth of cars on Bring a Trailer and as a result of Bring a Trailer, that auction site that I talk about a lot on this radio station. And those are one-at-a-time sales of vintage cars. And I've yet to have somebody that was upset that didn't get taken care of. There was one guy that was upset. Everybody else was happy pretty much. I mean, sometimes you got a little buyer's remorse kicks in there with some folks. But this one guy was really not happy, and I didn't realize the vehicle had the issues that it had. It was a early 70s Porsche 911, and it was had some issues. And so I said, get an estimate of what it's going to cost to fix it, and I'll pay for it. And he did, and I said, well, you know, that's kind of excessive. Are you sure? I mean, there, certain things need to be expected, right? And I went back and looked at all the disclosures that I had written out in Bring a Trailer, and a couple of the things that he was wanting me to replace with brand new were just part of the vehicle and were very well disclosed in the writing that I put in for the car. And so I said, you know, I'll pay for all this other stuff, but I pretty much said that this vehicle had this issue and that issue. And he said, okay, that's fine. He was trying to gouge me. Imagine a buyer wanting to gouge a car dealer. Maybe they feel like it's retribution, justifiable retribution, but not in this case. So anyway, I sent him a check for like, I don't know, it was like $7,000, which is pretty significant. So he was happy. But we have to do what we can to make folks happy. And when a car doesn't turn out like it's supposed to, then that's what you do. That's what you do if you're a reputable business, that is. But thanks again to all of you who sent me those nice notes. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm the one that's I'm just lucky to have gotten to know the guy. And his family is the one that has to deal with the loss for, you know, long term and more intensely. You know, when it's you, it's a family member, it's a child, it's a husband, something like that. It takes on a whole different meaning than if it's just a friend or even just an acquaintance. You know, we see all these people going through all this tragedy, and it's just, you become numb to it, don't you? I mean, it's just like after a while, you just hear so much of so many people expiring to this virus. I mean, we're up in the 650,000 range. Who would have ever thought that? But that's where we are, and you know, like I say, we got to keep on moving. Speaking of moving, I got an audit request from Nissan the other day. Now, when you come in and you buy a car and it has a rebate on it, then that rebate does not come from me as a dealer. It comes from Nissan. Now, I give you credit for it up front on the deal. So, you know, basically, if let's say a car has a $3,000 rebate, you use that as basically $3,000 down payment. It shows up on the down payment line, and you pay sales tax on the sale price, and then minus the rebate. I mean, you have to. In other words, the rebate is taxable. That's what I'm trying to say. And like that, in the early days of rebates, people did not understand that. So, well, why do I have to pay tax on it? I said, because it's like down payment. It's like you're pulling it out of your pocket, except it's coming out of another pocket. So Nissan and Ford also, they audit dealers, and so all the manufacturers do, to make sure that the rebate money that they're throwing out there is being properly applied and basically getting into the hands of the consumer. And so, you know, we'll pass with flying colors, but still, occasionally they will charge something back because of the way the delivery was reported or something, and we just eat that. You know, we're not able to call the customer and say, hey, you owe me an extra $3,000 because the factory didn't pay it. They backed out. Well, who's going to pay that? Nobody is. So anyway, we get to provide all of this information for this audit. And anytime somebody uses the word audit around me, I don't like it. But we get warranty audits. Like if you bring your car in to get a service, just take one example, and we do a repair on it. If we don't document everything on that repair, then theoretically, Ford could come in and say, you didn't put this little information on the ticket, so we're gonna charge you back $10,000 for that repair. That's just how, you know, that's their money that they use to pay for your repair while it's under warranty. And we have to document everything. And if we don't, then they can audit us and charge it back. And I've had a few of those in my past, and I wasn't real happy about it, but it doesn't matter how happy or unhappy you are. You still pay. Speaking of paying, Tara and I, my wife and I, purchased one of those sunsetter awnings. You know, those things you can put on over your back porch if you don't have a covering. Now, we have a cover over most of our porch. It wraps all the way around the house. But there's this one section that the grandkids like to play on. We have a little toy, and we fill a little pond up or a little pool up with water, and they slide down the slide and splash into it. They think that's a lot of fun. But it gets a lot of hot. It gets hot out there on the deck. And so my wife said, let's put up one of those motorized awnings. So she found one, did all the research. We bought it. Well, we didn't pay for all of it. You pay half down, and then when they come install it, you pay the other half and the labor for installing it. So we waited and waited and waited. Finally, the day came. This is this past Saturday, and they came and installed it. And as soon as they put it up there, the awning is bent, or the roller that it rolls on. It's just bouncing up and down and just not doing right. And the guy says, well, I still need to pick up a check. And I said, no. Negative. That's not going to happen. I said it nicer than that, though. I said, no, tell you what we'll do. I can go ahead and pay you the labor, but I'm not paying for the other half of this awning until the awning is replaced. And he agreed. He was nice about it, but, you know, he asked for it first. And, folks, I'm just a big advocate of not paying until the job is done. We do restoration projects for people, and that, sometimes that's hard to collect the money on those kind of deals. They have these grandiose ideas as to what they want done to these vehicles. They have no clue what it's going to cost. So what we try to do is we put it all in writing. My dad said many years ago, good fences make good neighbors. And I know what that means. It means that you put stuff in writing, and then you don't have to worry about it, whether somebody has a good memory or not, right? So if you're getting a car worked on, restored, or whatever, you know, you just need to make sure that you know what it's going to cost up front and get it in writing. And then when they try to jack you up on that, say, well, remember this? You know, just show it to them and say, oh, yeah, I remember that. But it ended up costing more. Well, I mean, you should have called me. I mean, this is people take advantage of others, sometimes on purpose and sometimes by accident. And sometimes they underbid a job. That's not your fault. That's their fault. Now, if you want to be a nice guy, then that's fine. If you want to pay them extra, that's fine. I've done that as well. You know, people make honest mistakes. But if you feel like somebody's gigging you a little bit, then sometimes you just have to push back on them. Don't you find it interesting how people are hesitant to complain, though, in certain circumstances? Just like in a restaurant, I've had people tell me that they had terrible service and they're never going back. I said, well, did you complain? No, I didn't complain. I didn't want to create a scene. Well, you don't have to create a scene. Just ask the waitress to send the manager over and just tell them you might get a free meal. So I've always appreciated people who complained. I don't like to hear it, but I need to hear it, right? I mean, because that's how I improve my business. If something happens to your car while it's in here, and say we don't fix it, you have to bring it back more than once to get the same problem fixed. You know, those are the kind of things that drive people off, and it makes them not want to come back. If you have that kind of a circumstance happen to you, complain. You know, make sure that the people, before you pay your bill, make sure that the people who are in charge know that you're not happy. And please be nice. I mean, in my 43 years of doing this, I have dealt with a lot of people who were just flat out rude, mean, angry, and, you know, they didn't care who they made mad, and they're having a problem with a repair or a car deal or something like that. And the ones that are nice are the ones that you want to help. And the ones that are just bitter and angry and, you know, calling you names and stuff like that, those are the ones you don't want to help. So I'm saying, I mean, you may feel the same way. I mean, is the person who yells and screams at you entitled to just as much as the person who's nice? Yeah, probably. But I think, you know, we just got to be respectful and human to each other. Sometimes being nice is not the human thing. Doesn't seem like a lot of people got that message in school. But anyway, I'm going to take a breath, and I will be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, in a blatant attempt to bribe unions, Toyota and Honda are opposing a U.S. House electric vehicle tax plan. So here's what these yahoos are wanting to do, is they are wanting to give a $4,500 tax incentive to people who buy electric vehicles. Now, this is in addition to what you already get, which is $7,500. They're wanting to give an additional $4,500 if those vehicles were made by union employees. So why would you think Toyota and Honda would be opposed to that? It's because they pay their employees well. It's because they take care of their employees. They have positive work environments. They operate in the South for the most part. And their employees elect to not be unionized. Now, they could unionize, but they don't want to, because Toyota and Honda take care of their workers. And, you know, Ford does too, but Ford and, you know, most of the domestic automakers are you know, beholden to the UAW, United Auto Workers. And so, but this is just, the Democrats are using this to suck up to the unions. Now, I've got no problem with unions, as long as they don't raise the cost of goods to the ultimate consumer. You know, if employees are not being taken care of, then, you know, I get it. But, you know, complain, just like you do at the restaurant. House Democrats are also considering an increase in the corporate tax rate. Now, you may think that as a consumer, that the or as just an individual who pays taxes, that, yeah, stick it to those corporations. Well, I'm a corporation. My business is incorporated. You know, if you have the name LLC or incorporated after your name, then you're a corporation. And, you know, so if my taxes go from 21 to 26.5%, that's more money going out that I could have either kept in my business, you know, for working capital, or could have, my employees could have earned additional bonuses, or I could, you know, expand my business, buy more equipment, you know, do that kind of stuff. But no, they want that money. So from 21 to 26.5, I think it was in the mid-30s, I can't remember what it was, before Trump came along and he reduced the corporate income tax rate to 21%, which really spurred a lot of growth. And they're also going to add 3 percentage point surtax on people who make more than $5 million a year. I'm safe. I'd say most of you are pretty safe as well. Another thing in the news, chip shortage. You tired of hearing of that? Well, it is actually driving tech companies and car makers closer. They're needing to cooperate on this problem. And it's moving into the fast lane, according to the news. The chip shortage has caused them to recognize that cars, being more digital, are going to need more and more chips as we go forward. I was explaining to a customer the other day what a chip really was in layman's terms, which is about the only way I can explain it. I said, I don't know if you realize this or not, but the chips that they're talking about, the individual microprocessors, in order to see the working of one of those, you have to look at it under a microscope. And he said, what? Yeah. I said, the actual working components of a microprocessor are so small that you can't see it. And those things are made, it's a chemical process as much as anything. And he said, well, why can't they just build a plant? I said, it takes like 3 years to build a plant, they call them fabs. I guess that's short for fabulous? No, probably fabrication. But it's a fabrication plant, and it's where the silicone comes in one side and these microprocessors go out the other side. And they are so essential in vehicles. Somebody told me that an F-150 has, if it's a loaded up F-150, may have as many as 1,500 microprocessors on it to make everything work. Now, my Ford Bronco is sitting outside right now. I can see it. Hello. It's a 1970 Ford Bronco. You know how many microprocessors are on it? Zippo. There's none. Life was simpler then, wasn't it? Oh, well. I don't think we're going to return to that. Even the new Ford Maverick that's coming out, it's going to be a high-tech vehicle. The base model, even though it's only $19,995 plus freight, that's a pretty good price for a truck. It'll be our price leader vehicle. It's going to be eat up with microprocessors because the base model is a hybrid. The advantage of that is that it will get 40 miles to the gallon on the highway, and guess what it gets in the city? 40 miles per gallon in the city. Actually, hybrids usually get better mileage on the highway, in the city, than they do on the highway because the engine isn't on as often. It actually shuts off and you run on the electric motor. But that's some of what is causing this crisis and why there aren't 75 F-150s out on my lot right now. We have 12. And I'm not the only one with a massive shortage of those. Well, we'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, the last couple years of my dad's life, I would ask him, how you doing, Dad? And he would always respond the same way. He would say, instead of saying, I'm good, everything's cool, anything like that, he would say, I'm grateful. You know, and gratitude is something that you maybe don't feel right now. Maybe you don't have anything to be grateful for or feel like you don't, but I do, and I hope you do, and you really do, because I think about the loss of friends and family members and customers and stuff like that. And, you know, the way I look at that, other than just being sad for a while and you know, trying to find a way to move forward, is that nobody can take away what you had with them. You know, nobody can take away the memories that I have of my dad and my son and my grandfather. Those are they're mine. And regardless of what happens going forward, I will always have those. And that's something to be grateful for. You know, I'm grateful that I had got to know Tim Cable and I got to know Bill Meade. And of course, Bill's still with us and Tim is not. But I'm grateful for the opportunity to have worked with him, and also after he's passed away, to be able to hear all the wonderful things that people have said about that man. And his kids and his wife and people that know him have a lot to be thankful for, and just because of what kind of guy he was. And so anyway, I'm grateful to have been his friend and be able to work with him. And I'm grateful for you guys and gals, everybody out there that listens to this show. And I'm going to get my act together and get back on track and try to do the best I can for car buyers and car owners. And we'll do that starting tomorrow morning. I'll see you then.